Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 19th, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, welcome aboard, everybody, for another hour of conversation about our nation's space program during a Daytona 500 weekend. I spent, more years than I should have at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, living in Daytona Beach, and I'm used to this weekend in our lives every year. It was the weekend to get out of town because the traffic jam outside our apartment literally would keep us, as prisoners, I guess, in our apartment if we had let it. So it was time to get out of town and enjoy beautiful weather like this that we're experiencing this weekend. I hope you're enjoying it. We've got lots of plans to be outdoors, but maybe for the next hour, why don't you keep the radio standing by and enjoy some interesting conversation. Certainly today we're going to spend our hour talking about the upcoming Space Shuttle Discovery mission to the International Space Station, and lots of things to talk about there for sure. You are invited, of course, to join me on the program today. Let me know what's on your mind or what questions you have about our space program in general, or maybe the space shuttle in particular, Discovery's mission or whatever. As usual, the numbers 321-768-1240, *1240 for AT&T wireless customers here on the Space Coast. If you are listening to us online or perhaps just more comfortable with the email, then you can certainly send us something. Our address is spacetalking@AOL.com. And with all of that in mind, let's do start our hour today with our weekly look at the launch forecast, because it is in the news. Our forecast every week brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, yesterday NASA did finally officially approve the launch date for Discovery's final mission into space. The shuttle now scheduled to lift off this upcoming Thursday at 4:50 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 4:50, again, p.m. Eastern Time. The usual, in this case, going for 4:50, a five-minute window. There was some discussion about bumping the launch to Friday. That didn't happen. The concern being that a European ATV, their automated transfer vehicle, basically their cargo vehicle, they launched one to orbit on Wednesday, atop an Ariane 5 vehicle, a 44,000-pound spacecraft into low Earth orbit. It was the biggest payload that Ariane 5 had ever carried. That vehicle is scheduled to rendezvous and dock, if you will, with the space station on Thursday, just a few hours before the launch. And the original plan was that they needed a day of separation from those two events. The Ariane launch had slipped a day, and in doing so had jeopardized the idea that maybe Discovery would fly on Thursday or would fly on Friday instead of Thursday. So when you get all that space traffic control figured out, the bottom line is the Ariane launched on Wednesday, the 200th launch of an Ariane rocket in its program history. The European ATV, which is nicknamed the Kepler, will join up with the space station on Thursday. And then a few hours later, Discovery hopefully will get off the ground at 4:50 in the afternoon. Of course, Space Talk and WMMB will bring you live coverage of the launch on Thursday. In the meantime, today for the in the remaining segments of the program, we're going to offer up a mission preview of sorts with the help of NASA's Flow Director for Discovery, Stephanie Stilson, who will join us in just a few moments. And then afterwards, we'll also hear from an author, Bob Adamczyk, who has written a book about Discovery's many flights into space. Wanted to just take a couple of minutes here really quick, offer up another nugget of space news related to the shuttle this past week. They made some news here in that President Obama's budget for the next fiscal year has apparently in it $14 million in the Air Force budget for Atlanta, for the idea that Atlantis, the space shuttle Atlantis, would be sent to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, to the Air Force Museum there at the conclusion of the space shuttle program. Got a lot of people talking about it, got made the paper, of course, and people get excited about hearing that. The emotions raise a little bit, and we just want to calm everybody down and not worry about it. Of course, this all has to do with where are you going to retire these orbiters, what museums are they going to go to when the space shuttle stops flying. And right now, of course, you've got Discovery and Atlantis and Endeavour as the three candidates to be shared amongst, 28, 29 different museums that have put in formal bids for displaying the orbiters. Discovery, we already know, will be going to the National Air and Space Museum, allegedly to replace the space shuttle at Enterprise, which was the test vehicle that never flew in space. It's currently on exhibit up there. Enterprise will likely be offered to another museum somewhere in the United States. That leaves Endeavour and Atlantis. Well, Endeavour, well, we'd sure like to keep it here at the Kennedy Space Center. I think we're going to keep it here at the Kennedy Space Center. I think that that will be the decision of NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden in honor of the very fact this is the launch and landing place. We've got the KSC Visitor Complex well-suited with its guest program, with its education programs, and a ready market of guests and tourists coming here from around the world every year to Central Florida. No problem here in keeping it here. We've got the people coming. We've got the story to tell. And we've proven that we have the capability to do that as well. Now, where does that leave Atlantis? Well, the Johnson Space Center sure would like one. And I think they probably do deserve one in the sense that Mission Control and the astronauts and the people that ran the program were basically based there for the history of the shuttle program. They don't have a lot of flight hardware to be put on display there, and that could mean either that the tradition is just don't send them the hardware or give them something more that they can use. They don't have a large tourism operation. The numbers aren't as big as elsewhere, but they're very deserving of the idea that, you know, we ought to have a shuttle there. But, you know, this idea of Wright-Patterson, the $14 million that's been, proposed to give them, is there to build a building that can house a shuttle but doesn't have to house a shuttle. The primary purpose, as I understand that building, is to be their new wing for their presidential aircraft. They want to get all of the different aircraft they have representing the various types of Air Force Ones, if you will, that have flown presidents, aircraft that have flown presidents through the years, under a roof, under the protection of environmental control. And while building that building, they said, well, let's do our space wing there. So let's gather all of our space-related artifacts and put them under the roof there as well. And while we're doing it, let's make sure that if we do get an orbiter, we're able to put it in that building as well. So that building is being built for a lot of other reasons than just a space shuttle. And the way I want to read it anyway as a Floridian is that if they get the space shuttle, then it's the dessert. You know, it's the cream on the crop. It's the top, whatever. It's the extra stuff they need just to sweeten the deal. Now, sending Atlantis to Dayton, Ohio is an interesting idea to consider. Atlantis did fly a lot of DOD flights. Its first flight was a Defense Department flight. That museum is very popular in the Midwest. They do bring in millions of people every year, and it would be a great chance to tell the story of the space shuttle and how the Department of Defense helped out in making our space shuttle program happen. Whether history will judge that's a good idea or a bad idea, we can still argue that another day. But I think it's all interesting, and I wouldn't get bent out of shape over the fact that the Air Force has that money there. We're going to get an orbiter here and let the rest of the nation divvy him up as they see fit. At least that's what I hope happens, and I'm hopeful and I'm confident that that's what we'll see. Well, when we return, NASA's Stephanie Stilson is going to join us, and plus your comments and questions. Space Talk is sponsored by Space Florida. I'm Jim Benke. Stay tuned. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. 321-768-1240 is our phone number into the studio, star 1240. For those of you out and about on AT&T wireless devices, our email is spacetalking@aol.com. And if you've got a question or comment about our space shuttle program or the upcoming flight of Discovery or anything on your mind about the space program, we do invite you to call and welcome them at all times. As we look ahead to the countdown to launch of Discovery this week, we're going to get back in the air, get back into the usual way of doing things around here, and I can't wait to do it to help us understand where we're at in the countdown and the preparations for launch, to understand what's happened during the last couple of months as we've waited for Discovery to take its turn into space. We have with us NASA's flow director, that is the person in charge of preparing the vehicle itself with her team, for launch, directing the whole effort out there in terms of Discovery's preparations. That's none other than Stephanie Stilson, and Stephanie joins us on the phone today. Stephanie, welcome to Space Talk.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on board. Well, your vehicle manager, Jennifer Newfer, was with us a couple of months ago, got us all excited and said Discovery is ready to fly, and then filled it up with hydrogen and oxygen, and life took a left turn.
Yes, we were all very surprised about that and had some challenges put in front of us, but we believe we have those behind us now, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about us. Set the stage. Where are you at right now, and what problems did you overcome that says we're safe to fly?
Sure. Well, yesterday we had our agency flight readiness review, and that is where we have decided that we are going to go for a launch on the 24th of February. So that was a great achievement by the team to get to that point and everybody gather together to make sure that we're ready to go. So actually today we have a day off. The teams are home relaxing and preparing for what will happen tomorrow, and that is pressurization of some of the main systems, the orbiter maneuvering system, reaction control system, the main propulsion system. We'll do the pressurization there, and that'll lead us then into starting our countdown on Monday. So right now, smooth going for us with the Discovery team.
It all sounds so familiar, and you don't want to use the word routine. So even in Discovery's last flight, you know, this is still all real special and really carefully laid out stuff that you do, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is a test vehicle every time we fly, and I think people tend to forget that until we have challenges like we've had recently. But everything we do, we're constantly coming up with new things that we see that we didn't expect. And so it's always important for the team to react to those and overcome.
So the external tank gets filled up. You get a leak. I guess you deal with that pretty quick. But then you find some cracks in the foam, and that led to some, I guess, are they structural cracks or cracks in structural members? I never really did understand whether it was part of the skin of the tank or attachments to the tank. What did you find up there, and why is it safe to fly right now? What was it about the whole thing that made you, you know, realize that, yeah, this is okay with the way we repaired it?
Sure. Well, the cracks were found in what are called stringers, which are structural components on what is called the inner tank, which if you look at the large external tank, it looks like one big tank, but it's actually made up of two separate tanks, liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen. Between those two separate tanks is what we call the inner tank connecting those, and there's a ribbed aluminum material that makes up that inner tank. And those U-shaped pieces of aluminum are called stringers.
Okay.
And that's where the cracks were found. And so because it is a structural component, it was important for us to ensure that those components would hold through during liftoff and so forth, and tanking first and then liftoff. So when we found the cracks, of course, that was not acceptable. We need to understand why the cracks were there and then how to go about changing that. And so a lot of investigative work was done here at Kennedy, folks at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama, where the project is managed out of, and basically went in and repaired where those cracks were found, and then also installed basically a doubler, so something to give extra strength to those stringers all the way around the circumference of the tank. And based on the analysis and all the folks involved with that, had those good discussions over the past months, and then came to the flight readiness review with that story. And at this point, we believe all the investigation we've done has proven that we are safe to fly.
Yeah, and those cracks, this isn't like, you know, big giant cracks that you can see from space. These are what? They're not microscopic either. I mean, can you characterize how big they were?
Well, when we found the cracks, we were actually using an X-ray. So, yes, it's not something that with a naked eye that you would see those cracks. So that is a good point to make. So when we found them, we were using an X-ray activity. And so, you know, good to quantify it in that regard. So
and
they're small cracks.
And then the other part of the story that intrigued me, of course, initially, and there's another, well, there's actually two parts. The first one is, you know, again, the whole idea of why haven't we seen this before? And did I hear correctly that you as you went back and looked at the heritage of this particular stringers and what metal they came from and the batch and all that you found something different than previous?
Yes, and the folks that build the tank out at the Michoud Assembly Facility in Louisiana, they have seen these cracks previously during fabrication of the tank and have gone in and done similar repair methods when they found them. So it wasn't unheard of to see those cracks at that time. But during the course of the investigation, they also determined that the strength of some of the aluminum that they had received had what they called a mottled effect in the way that it looked, modeling in the kind of coloring. And determined that to mean that it wasn't as strong as they expected it to be. So there was some problem with that aluminum.
So when you put these doublers on, big pieces of metal clamped on there, glued on there, bolted on there, and, you know, one less guy gets to fly or one less meal gets flown on the mid-deck to make up for the weight or really no penalty whatsoever?
No penalty whatsoever. They are riveted on, so they're secured on to the existing stringers that are there. No change in anything that we had to do on the orbiter for the mission based on that.
And all this had to be done in the vehicle assembly building. I mean, you had to roll back.
Yes, the initial cracks that we found at the launch pad, we did repair those. But then we made the decision that we wanted to go back to the vehicle assembly building and perform that X-ray inspection all the way around. Because out of the launch pad, you don't have access to what I'll call the backside of the tank, so the side opposite of where the orbiter is.
Mm-hmm.
And so sure enough, we performed those X-rays and did find a couple small cracks on that backside and then chose to go ahead and add the reinforcement all the way around.
And I think it's important, Stephanie, to characterize, if you would, the mood while you're doing all of this. I'm asking this from the approach that there were a lot of people outside the space program who are looking at all this and saying, you know, oh, whoops, what a coincidence. It's another problem. They get to delay another couple months. They all get to keep working another few months. You know, take your time, slow it down. But my sense is, and of course, knowing you guys and the team the way I do, that's all a bunch of, you know, BS basically. You guys are doing exactly what you've done all the time from the beginning that any of you have been working out there.
Absolutely. Safety, I can guarantee you, is our top priority in everything that we do. And I can also tell you that the team was very disappointed that we got to the point of tanking the external tank and being prepared for launch and then to have to scrub. That was not a good feeling for anybody. Although there was additional work that had to be performed, it went much longer than I think anybody would have anticipated at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody kept focused, kept their head down, relied on the program to make sure we were doing the right thing in regards to the investigation and then the changes that we made. And I tell you what, the team's just very anxious for us to get STS-133 on its way.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I mean, I just know I'm already starting to get nervous and starting to get all, you know, through get those emotions that get going during the week. Take us through just real quick now. We've got about another minute or so left before we're going to take our next break. For those who may be new to this, believe it or not, after all this time or need to be reminded what's going to happen, give us the high-level overview of what you've got to do between now and Thursday to get this thing off the ground.
Okay. Well, like I said, today we're not doing any work today, but tomorrow we'll pick up with something that's very important, and that's pressurizing those systems that are used for the attitude maneuvers and inserting into orbit, rendezvous, and deorbit, and so forth, and then also pressurization of the MPS system, which is what allows us to lift off the launch pad.
Main propulsion system, right.
Correct. And so once that's completed, basically we go into our standard countdown operations. So basically that's the time where the team is on console, monitoring their systems, and basically just walking through all the final checkout and preparations to get us to a point where we're ready to lift off.
Yeah, and it's I would like to characterize it as you've got the shuttle out there at the pad, and you've got all these systems pointing there and fluids and electric lines and everything. Now you start turning this thing alive. Now each system gets turned on, each tank gets filled, gets pressurized, systems get checked, communication systems get activated, and even to the point where in the launch pad, you know, they're literally taking, you know, fences off, clearing up the debris, moving trucks away, securing the Coke machine that's underneath the launch pad, and there is one beneath there, believe it or not, and getting all this stuff ready to go to the point where, you know, you clear the tower, you clear the thing, you load it up with the fuel, you put the astronauts on board, and it counts down all miraculously to this launch at 450. It's an amazing process. How many people is involved?
Oh, there's hundreds of people on the team throughout the entire processing, and then with the launch countdown team as well. And so you're right. There's the engineers that are in the firing room that are monitoring their systems, and then you've got the technicians that are out there at the launch pad doing the preparations there. We have quality. We have safety. We have planners and schedulers. We have the janitorial staff that are ensuring there's no foreign object debris that's being left about. So everybody has a crucial role, and there's no member of the team that isn't as important as the other.
That's absolutely amazing. Well, Stephanie, you're going to stand by for a moment. We're going to pause now, take our five-minute built-in hold so everyone can take a break, get caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. When we return, we're going to talk more about Shuttle Discovery and particularly about the mission it's about to fly with our special guest, Stephanie Stilson. Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. We're talking about Space Shuttle Discovery's final mission into space this week. Hopefully we're going to get off the ground on Thursday at 4:50 in the afternoon. Stephanie Stilson, NASA flow director for that mission, is with us to talk about that. But before we get back to Stephanie, let's check in, as we always do around this time of the show each week, with our sponsor, Space Florida, and our good friend Pat McCarthy, director of spaceport operations. Pat, it's been a busy week for you guys, at least for the suits, huh?
It has. Senior management's been very engaged this week. The rest of us, you know, just doing our usual day-to-day things.
That's right. What's for lunch and when's it time to go home?
Yeah, that's right.
So you had a board, I guess the big news in terms of the organization is there was a board of directors meeting yesterday.
Yes, up in Tallahassee, most of the statutorily appointed members of the board, like the transportation and education directors up in Tallahassee, as well as the lieutenant governor and our senior membership were there.
I know you were down here. The first meeting following the new governor having now taken place, anything new to report there? Was it pretty much just a straightforward meeting yesterday?
Yesterday was more toward approving a couple of the contracts that we had been preparing in the last few months, you know, since the last board meeting. And have not heard the appointment of the new board members yet that the governor is going to appoint, so we're waiting for that. But we did get through approval of several important contracts.
And you had some developments with the federal government that looks like it could help us around here as well.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. The NASA Inspector General put out a report this week where they were talking about what kind of vehicle was going to replace Delta II. Because there's only one mission left for Delta II that's going to fly a NASA payload, so they're trying to find, you know, a medium-class booster.
Mm-hmm.
And their recommendation was that they should use the amongst the Falcon 9 and the Atlas V, which is a little bit oversized for some of the payloads, but they recommended the Orbital Sciences Minotaur. And that's interesting because it's a decommissioned Peacekeeper ICBM, and that's good news for us because the Minotaur fits on Launch Complex 46, which Space Florida controls along with the Navy. So, interesting enough, the START Treaty, which was just recently ratified, and I know some folks were squawking about that because, you know, it's going to change our nuclear deterrent force and all that, but one of the smaller things in there which bodes well for our business in Florida is that it makes it easier for us to support Minotaur launches from the Cape, because decommissioned ICBMs, if you're going to launch them as a space booster, you had to report them to the Russians. Well, now we can report them, but we're not restricted in the number of sites where we can fly them from, and one of the sites we want to fly it from is Launch Complex 46. So you tie that with the Inspector General's report that says go buy some Minotaurs, And we can stand up and say, hey, we got a launch pad right here at the Cape that can support those. So I think it's going to bode well for some new business for us.
That's great. As much as we preach diversification and looking for other ways to do business down here, it's also helpful to see any movement that allows us to get more rockets flying from the Space Coast. Absolutely.
That's right. And, of course, we're also working with the Lockheed Martin ATK Athena team to bring their vehicle to fly from 46, because that's another one that recently won a NASA contract for launch services. So we're looking forward to working with them as well on Complex 46.
All the way. Good stuff. Good report, Pat. Well, we'll say goodbye to you for now. Talk to you again, hopefully, with Discovery in the air next week.
Yep. Sounds great, Jim. Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you soon. Pat McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations for our major sponsor, Space Florida. Let's get back to talking about Discovery's mission with Stephanie Stilson, NASA's flow director at the Kennedy Space Center, for this particular vehicle. And Stephanie, let's talk about you real quick, because you fill big shoes, of course. When Discovery's first flight took place, those many years ago, John J. Tiptalone was the flow director, and you know, we all know, at least a lot of us know, what a character he was and still is. And yet, here you are after all these years wrapping up the legacy. I don't suppose we find you tending bar anywhere, do you, after hours?
No, not at all. But I do know Tip very well, and I've had the fortune of working actually for him when I worked in the space station organization. So I did not really meet up with him, first of all, when he was working Discovery, but lo and behold, here I am following in his footsteps.
Yeah, and how did you give us the quick game show bio? How did you wind up here, and what's your interest in all of this?
Well, gosh, I really was interested in space from a very young age. In fact, I remember I had a Ranger Rick magazine, if you remember that had a punch-out solar system.
And, oh, my.
And I punched that out and asked my dad to help me hang it across my bedroom ceiling using fishing line. And so from the very beginning, I was always very fascinated by space. And in the third grade, actually convinced him to also let me go to a college-level astronomy course at the community college down in Fort Myers. And so we did that together, and just had always been very fascinated with spaceships and planets and so forth. And being good in science and math as I grew up, determined that I should go into engineering, and mm-hmm. I did that. In the third grade, I also had a visit to Kennedy Space Center, believe it or not, and my dad is always proud to tell the story that it was at that point in time, and standing out in the rocket garden, that I told him, you know, Dad, when I grow up, I'm going to work for NASA. And he patted me on the head and said, of course, honey, whatever you want to do, that's great. So then I went off to college and studied engineering, and actually began co-oping with NASA here at Kennedy as a sophomore in college. So I immediately got to start experiencing what it'd be like to work at Kennedy Space Center, and of course fell in love with it.
What's your earliest launch that you remember?
Oh gosh, I can't even give you the number. I was so overwhelmed at the time, but. But see, 89, so whatever was around that time frame would have been the first one, because I definitely was out there watching.
Oh, my. That's great. And I'll tell the story on the launch day about my first watching Discovery's maiden launch in 1984, standing on the river with my wife, and it was her first launch after we had moved from Minnesota. It's stuff you'll never forget. Let's move forward and get off of us. Let's talk about the mission. Discovery's final flight is a trip to the International Space Station, absolutely needed, carrying a lot of neat stuff, and a great story to tell about the cargo. Give us that sense of what Discovery's going to do up there.
Right, very important mission. And folks, if they aren't aware, we're carrying up our main payload is the permanent multipurpose module. And basically, if you remember, we've been flying the multipurpose logistics modules back and forth to the space station.
Right.
And actually, on STS-131, we flew up Leonardo and brought it back. And then the payload community had the task of converting Leonardo over to this permanent module that we can leave on station. So we'll be taking up a module full of supplies, and then we'll leave it there so they can use it for storage space and whatnot on the station. So basically giving them some additional space up there. And another thing we're going to be flying is the Express Logistics Carrier, which will also stay up on station. We'll take up a radiator on the top portion of that carrier, and then we'll leave it up there, and they can use it to store other payloads and equipment that are brought up on future missions. So real excited about accomplishing STS-133.
So a lot of this just having to do with bringing up spares and the capability to just store stuff and set up the station to be better equipped to basically get along without the space shuttle program. Is that a way to say it?
Well, you know, they're going to continue to have flights and, you know, other payloads coming up. So really just giving us a chance to continue that good science that they're doing out on the station.
Yeah. Now the permanent module, and I know you're on the orbiter side, and this may be a better, fair question for the payload guys, but can you characterize what a chore it was or what a really challenge it was to get Leonardo ready for this permanent thing? Of course, that was not the original plan, but someone came up with the idea somewhere along the line, let's bolt that thing on there and keep it up there forever. And of course, that requires some systems changes. And then, you know, you throw the guy into the room and say, okay, here's your challenge, and you got 6 months, go.
Right, and I don't know a lot of their details, but I do know the payload processing team had a tremendous challenge ahead of them when they started out with this. I know they had to remove a lot of equipment out of Leonardo to reduce the weight and make some changes. They also had to, one of the big things was add some shielding on the outside to protect the module from micrometeoroid and orbiter debris, MMODs, as we like to call it, since we have to have an acronym for everything.
That's right. It's easier. It makes it sound cool, you know?
Right, exactly. So I can tell you that they worked hard and met all the milestones that we needed them to meet in order to maintain our original schedule for our original launch date.
And a couple of questions real quick. Of course, we had to swap out a crew member kind of late in this flow. Any issues that came up in the FRR with that?
They did talk about that and said that Bowen was doing very well with his training and that Tim was actually out there helping. They talked about that they had a run in the Nutribuoyancy lab, and that Tim was there assisting. So, you know, we're all a big family here. We know things happen, but we all work together to make the mission successful. So that was a great example of that, to see those two working together. And we all feel bad for Tim, but we know Steve will do a great job.
Well, and when Tim got hurt, I'm sure you all went running out like I did to make sure you bought a mission patch before they got changed.
Yes, I believe those will be collector's items now, for sure.
That's right. Someday we'll talk about 51D and 51E and how many different patches there were. Let's talk about Discovery. We just got a couple minutes left. Discovery coming home for its last flight. What do you and your team have to do, or what are you tasked to do at this point? And how long will you remain as a team, do you think? What's next for you and for everybody?
Sure. Well, as soon as we land, hopefully back at the Kennedy Space Center, we roll back into the orbiter processing facility. And for about the first month, it's pretty much what we call a standard down mission processing flow. So the main goal is to safe the vehicle and get it into a position where we can start working on it. So we go in and offload cryogenics, other propellants are drained, and so forth. And then we start inspecting the vehicle, most importantly the thermal protection system on the outside, to see if there's any damage that occurred that we then need to make the other teams aware of, things they may need to do to prepare for their mission. We get access into the vehicle. We remove engines. We investigate any in-flight anomalies that may have happened. Once again, the main goal is to give data to the other teams to ensure they have what they need to fly safe for their missions.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we get through about a month of what I'd call that standard processing flow that we do every time, we'll then get into our transition and retirement processing, basically safing the vehicle, not only for the workers that have access at the Kennedy Space Center, but then for the general public to be able to see Discovery when it goes on display.
And Stephanie, stand by. Would you hold for just a minute? I'm going to follow up real quick with a question. We'll be right back with Stephanie Stilson. This is Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. Space Talk also brought to you today by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, where you can still have a chance to see a space shuttle on its launch pad, as we've been talking about. Don't miss the Apollo Saturn V Center either. How about an IMAX movie? Or maybe the Shuttle Launch Experience, where you can channel your inner astronaut on a simulated voyage into orbit. And for just a limited time, enjoy $5 off the price of admission. Just go online and visit kennedyspacecenter.com for all the details. Well, we're back with NASA Flow Director Stephanie Stilson, the manager in charge of preparing Discovery for launch for NASA, the Kennedy Space Center. And Stephanie, just to wrap up with you a quick question, because I want to just acknowledge, first of all, you know, what a Herculean effort it's been to get this thing ready to fly, given all the stuff you've had to go through the last couple months, and just to recognize for you and the team that we're right there with you in terms of the emotions that go with this final flight as we as a community face, you know, the end and moving on to something else, and all that means for the nation and the program, as well as the personal sacrifices and the personal stories that that are out there, not all of them good, as we, you know, want to just clearly recognize as people lose their jobs. As you go into this countdown, what are your thoughts and emotions about flying Discovery for the last time?
Well, it is a very unique time for us because myself and the team, we're all very excited to launch and to have a successful mission. That's something we work so hard for all the time, and especially with the challenges we've had this flow. So we're real excited about that, but then we have to step back and think, well, gosh, but it is the last one for Discovery, and so that is sad for us. So there'll be a lot of tears both ways. There'll be tears of excitement and joy and happiness, but then there'll also be some sadness as well. And there's been tears already as we've been through this flow. And we've had some friends that have chosen to leave already or been forced to leave already, you know, based on the job situation. And that is hard. But I know that every team member that's ever worked on Discovery will always carry great memories of the work they have done here at Kennedy and the teammates that they've become friends with. And those team members are never not a part of our thoughts and our feelings when we launch the vehicle.
Well, do me a favor. After she safely gets off the ground and into orbit, enjoy particular and savor your bowl of beans and cornbread.
I will do that. Thank you very much, Jim.
Okay, Stephanie, good luck. Best wishes. Our prayers with you and the team, and we'll be in touch with you this week as we watch you do the briefings. There goes Stephanie Stilson, NASA Flow Director for the Kennedy Space Center for the Orbiter Discovery. And, of course, when Discovery lifts off this week, it'll be on its 39th mission, more than any other orbiters have flown. Of course, we'll have live launch commentary for you here on WMMB on Thursday. Discovery has certainly played host to some of the most memorable events of the shuttle era. And I just want to tell you, this Discovery is your favorite space plane. If it happens to be something that you want to have a keepsake about and know something about all the flights that Discovery's flown, our friends at Apogee Books has recently published a new book called Voyages of Discovery, which is a very good compilation of all the data and stories and information you want to know about every single flight of the Space Shuttle Discovery. The author of that book, Robert Adamczyk, is a retired naval officer and is going to join us on the phone for just a quick minute or two from his home in Norfolk, Virginia. Bob, welcome to Space Talk.
Hey, glad to be here.
Good. Well, we just got a couple of quick minutes here. And let's ask you, first of all, your personal interest in this and why Discovery of all the different orbiters you could have picked.
Well, like you said, I am a retired Navy officer, and for me as a former surface warfare officer, it's always been about the ship. I served on six great ships in my 20 years on active duty and wanted to do something related. But also, I've been a space fan since I was about 5 years old and also a big fan of the works of Arthur C. Clarke. And the ship that took Hal, Dave Bowman, and Frank Poole to Jupiter in 2001, 2010 was?
Was Discovery, absolutely.
Discovery. So that's what got me interested in her, and then just sat down, started writing.
Oh, that's great. You know, I hadn't made that link before. That's great. Well, as you've looked at the missions of Discovery and you've watched them yourself through your career and whatnot, anything particularly interesting that came up in your research? Any particular interesting story or what your favorite story about Discovery is?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of them. Her second mission, STS-51A, the satellite retrieval mission, is just one of those missions that showed the real promise of the space shuttle program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking real Buck Rogers type missions there. Post Challenger, we're looking at the deployment of the Hubble Space Telescope and how they almost didn't get pictures of that. The details of why they almost didn't is in the book. Post Columbia, I'm thinking my favorite mission there was STS-120. Delivered the Harmony node up to the station, and they had to do emergency EVA to fix a torn solar wing.
Sure.
Probably the single most important extravehicular activity in the history, in my opinion, of manned space flight.
Wow, that's all good stuff. Now, again, as we're running out of time here, and I didn't mean to shortchange you, I do want to make sure we plug what you're doing. You're going to be down here for the launch this week and doing
yes,
some
sir.
Book signings. Tell us where you're going to be, where we can meet you.
Okay, on the 23rd, which is L-1, I'll be at the U.S. Space Walk of Fame and Museum there in Titusville from 10 till noon, then again from 2 till 4. Then on launch day, I'll be at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex at the Space Store, doing signings from 1 to 3, and if all goes well, watching the launch shortly thereafter.
Yeah, that'll be absolutely outstanding. And you'll have a great view, good front door view of that thing lifting off if we can
really
get it off the ground.
I am really looking forward to watching her launch.
Have you seen the shuttle launch?
I've been stationed in Florida twice in my career. I've seen Columbia land, but I've never seen a launch. So
wow.
I'm really looking forward to this.
That's great. Bob, thanks for spending a couple of moments with us. And if you're interested in buying the book, you can get it through Amazon.com with a link through our website, Space Talk website at WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk. You'll see the link there to the book, and you can purchase it there. Or stop by and meet Bob this week at the Space Walk of Fame. Charlie Mars and the gang up there, or at the Visitor Complex. You can't miss a good deal. So there you go. Hey, we're going to talk. Well, I guess we just lost. Bill had a question, but we'll move on to the next thing. Want to remind you all that our live launch coverage of Shuttle Discovery's liftoff will be on Thursday afternoon. We'll probably start around 4 o'clock, maybe 3:30. We're working on the program details right now, but you can certainly tune it in during the last hour for coverage of the launch. We'll be live at the Kennedy Space Center press site to bring you all the latest that we possibly can. We'll have updates with Bill Mick throughout the week. Of course, stay tuned to Fox News for updates as well, and you can be assured that we'll be right on top of it. Next week, Space Talk again. We'll see what happens with the launch and kind of planning what we're going to do there, whether or not the launch slips or not. We always kind of keep those things open. The following week, I do want to mention that John Logsdon, space policy guru, nationally known, done a great book since he left the George Washington Space Policy Institute on JFK's involvement, President Kennedy's involvement with the space program, and kind of a historical look back at what he really did believe and didn't believe about everything about the space program. It's going to be really fascinating 2 weeks from today. So I guess that's it. We're about running out of time. Space Talk is sponsored by Space Florida and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. Thanks to Aaron today. Up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show, so do stay tuned to that. And, of course, we'll talk to you again on Thursday with live launch coverage of Space Shuttle Discovery from the Kennedy Space Center. I'm Jim Bankey. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.